Welcome to Demystifying Franchise Ownership, the podcast that brings you expert advice, transparency, and clarity around franchise ownership. Whether you are a prospective or current franchisee or franchisor, or simply curious about the topic, say hello to your host, Christine Givens.
So welcome back to Demystifying Franchise Ownership, where I share my knowledge, experience, and hard-earned lessons learned about franchise ownership. My audience loves to hear from franchisees, existing and former, and I am always stressing how important it is to talk to them, talk to franchisees when you're considering franchise ownership and also when you're looking at a specific franchise system. To that end, my guest today is Nora Farhat. Nora and her husband own 5 franchise brands in the Detroit area, as well as other businesses. And I cannot wait for you to hear what Nora has to say about being an entrepreneur and an owner of multiple franchise brands. So welcome, Nora.
Thank you so much for having me. I absolutely such a fan of the show, and I'm super excited to be here today.
Thank you. You should mention too that you have a podcast.
I do. It's called Upside Down Entrepreneurship, or just look up Nora Farhat. And it kind of does exactly what you're out there doing, right? Is trying to create more voices for franchise owners, for entrepreneurs, to really tell real stories, which I think is so important in this realm.
So tell the listeners a little bit about your journey and the brands you and your husband have invested in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love this story so much because it doesn't start in any way in a traditional form. I started out like everybody else. You're in school. You kind of don't know what you want to do. I was always very envious of kids that just always knew exactly what they wanted to do. I love baseball. I'm going to play baseball. Or they wanted to be president. I was just kind of ebbs and flows, going with the flow. And I knew I would go to college. That was just the expectation in my household. I knew I would have a job. I knew I was a hustler and I loved to work. The second I was 16, I ran out to the mall, and that's how we used to do it, and handed my resume or filled out an application everywhere I could until the one place called me back and I hustled it. I knew I loved working and I knew what my skills were, but I really didn't know what to do with that. So like everybody else, went to corporate, got my corporate job, and I thought, okay, I could do this. I love this. I could see myself growing in this organization. I worked corporate almost 15 years. and I, you know, worked my way up. I was the youngest director. I was definitely in that trajectory. But I think there's such a time, and I think I've always had this, that entrepreneurial spirit is what I call it, that desire to do your own thing, or honestly, the desire just not to work for anybody, the desire of saying, hey, I think I know what to do here, and I'm always being a little bit limited. So as much as, you know, the corporate environment was working and I was on the right tracks, I had that bit of like grit that just said, I want more. And I was in a transition year. I had been working overseas at that point. So when I was relocating back to the U.S., I looked at my husband and I just said, it's kind of now or never. I don't know if I had the guts to quit a job to start entrepreneurship, but I definitely knew that that would be the perfect opportunity. And that was also the reason we looked into franchising. I've always said, we're not the creatives. We're not the ones with the original idea that we have to implement. But we knew that we were operators and we knew how to execute. And I love that about the franchising world, because it's about finding a brand or a product that you already love, that has a track record, that has been developed, that has a proven model. And now your job is to take it and execute it and make it even better. So you're not taking away from it. You're not moving away from what it is that you're buying, which I think is such an important part of franchising. And you get to grow it. And at that time, we kind of fell on a British swim school, which is a learn to swim program. We had young kids. We were looking for the services ourselves. And we thought, this is perfect. So we started out with British swim school. And as we grew it, as we learned a lot, the difference between corporate and entrepreneurship are two completely different realms. And I think I didn't realize that. What is it? You work 100 hours, so you don't work 40 hours for somebody else. So that world, I was in the middle of it, definitely. And what we ended up doing is we ended up opening up British Swim School. And then following British Swim School, We kept wanting to grow and expand and kind of diversify. And then that led us to Mathnasium, which is a math learning center. And again, our kids were going to Mathnasium and we loved the program. So we found something again that we loved and we thought this would do great in our community. And from there, at that point, we had expanded our British swim school business. We owned our own pools and we couldn't find anybody to service them. So where do you go from there? You open Pool Scouts, which is a pool full service company, and where we were able to really kind of grow that side of the business to where we could service and operate pools. And we were able to learn all the know-hows, learn all about that business. And then we said, well, that's a seasonal business. And what do you do on the off season, right? And then that led us to Wonderly, which is this holiday lighting company that also does different types of lighting. And then we realized, even within ourselves, through all of these exploring and opening these different brands, is we started to get into property development and real estate. And that kind of led us to Real Property Management, which is another franchise. It's so interesting because I have a few companies out there that are not franchises, but I always find myself going back to franchising because I really love the model. I think once you understand it, I think that there's a lot of gray in it if people don't fully understand it. But once you understand it, it really comes down to executing it and taking skills that you probably already possess and figuring out how to bring those forward. So I think we were always naturally drawn to kind of looking at franchises when we wanted to grow, when we wanted to grow fast, and we wanted a proven model.
So one thing that you said when you were talking about yourself and what you wanted was you said you have that certain grit. Do you feel like that is a characteristic that franchisees need to have
I
to be
absolutely
successful?
do. Yes, I really do. And I think it's, grit for years, I knew how to describe it, but I didn't know what the word for it. And grit is a bit of a newer word. I know that I think people weren't using it, maybe 15, 20 years ago, but now it's something that we kind of understand. You have to have a belief in yourself. I think that is a big part of it. And I always tell people, if you don't believe in yourself, nobody else will. It really is the confidence game. So I always say to people, I think that part of grit is the hard work, the drive, the right, it's the critical thinking, it's the problem solving, but it really also is this belief in yourself, this idea that I know I could do this and I'm going to figure it out if I don't. I think that that is such an important component as well to entrepreneurship. And I always try to re-emphasize this and repeat this to people because unless you start speaking as if this is the best product and this is what it is, and you have all the faith in the world that it's going to work, nobody will follow. Nobody will buy it. Nobody will, believe you if you're not believing yourself when you're speaking.
So with the pool brand, is it a commercial mostly or residential or both?
Yeah, it's actually both. It focuses mainly on residential, but we love the commercial space, so we've done some commercial work as well. Pool Scouts really is residential, commercial, full service pool services. It could be everything from cleaning pools to opening pools, closing them, servicing equipment. It's a very interesting realm, and especially, we're from the Michigan area, and not everybody has a pool, so people didn't recognize either. That means the people that do have pools could not find anybody to service them except maybe the one place in town that was at capacity and it didn't have the capacity to take on any more customers. I wouldn't have known that unless until, British Swim School had me have pools and then I couldn't find anybody to service them.
So interesting. Is the expectation within the brand that it will be seasonal in the climates where, it's cold, you have a winter weather, or do they expect you then to go out and look for those commercial accounts to offset the seasonality?
I think they leave it to your discretion. I think some people love it because it is a seasonal business, and that's the way what's beautiful about franchising, right? Like you're running it based on what makes sense for you. I think some people, it's a seasonal business. Some people go looking for the indoor pools when you're in a winter market. Some people are in a year-round market and they're able to keep things running year-round. For us, it's all about kind of keeping momentum. So for me, I will take on the looking for the commercial services, looking for the indoor pools. That's how we choose to run it. You know, as a business owner, I never say no to business. So we'll figure it out. We'll make it work.
When we first met, which was
Yes.
a very short call, but we totally connected as entrepreneurs, as women, moms, all that wives.
Yes.
You talked about you focus a lot on operational efficiencies when you get into these franchise brands. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things you've automated within these brands?
I think this is such an important question. You know, when we first started, it really was just me and my husband bought a concept, and then we said, we're going to execute it. We trust ourselves, we know what we could do. And in, you know, thinking of swim lessons, my husband's literally in the water teaching the classes. I'm picking up the phone calls. I'm on deck. And then as we started to want to, you know, we kept growing and had all these customers and we started to staff it. What I realized is we had built a really good business that was mom and pop. And there is an issue with growth when you build like that. And I wouldn't have
Absolutely.
recognized that initially, but I think what we ended up doing was we built a great business. It was doing great. But guess what? If I'm sick, he's sick, you don't make your shift, we're shutting down for the day. Like that seems to be what we built. And I remember listening to somebody speak, and he had 150 landscaping companies. And I thought, how? It blew my mind. I said, no, that's not possible. I have one pool, one location, and I'm drowning. I don't know how you're supposed to do it. And I had to go talk to him. And, you know, that's when I really kind of recognized the importance of if you want to grow, you must delegate. I was naturally a micromanager. If you want to grow, you have to create the team and the people around you. You have to also accept that 80% is good enough in some regards. You have to be able to accept those things. And it wasn't until I shifted my mentality, until I was really able to continue to grow. You know, when somebody says to me, my God, how do you do five franchises and all these businesses? And I said, it was the structure that allows me to do it. Not that I had this, you know, grandiose plan. No, the plan was never there. The plan was just to run day to day. That was the plan. But within that, when I learned how to delegate, I had to learn, well, what systems do I need to have in place, right? What policies do I need to have in place? How do I make sure that when there's one person in charge, if they're not available, that there's a second person that's trained the same level that they are? So for me, when I talk about systems, one is fully utilizing the systems that you have, right? I used to do my staff schedule on an Excel sheet and email it out at the beginning of the week. Well, what happens when that changes? It's like, oh, wait, there's When I Work app out there, and that's phenomenal. And you can switch the schedule automatically. And that took away a big load of my time. So I really kind of look at things, you know, and this is where my automotive corporate background is going to come in. Lean Six Sigma, looking at policies, looking at practices, right? So
Kitty.
all of those things are things that we're going to be able to kind of work through. So I take a concept, I break it down. Where can I automate it in this part of the process? Where do I need a policy in this part of the process? Where do I need a training plan in this part of the process? I look at every aspect of my business at that detailed level. Even when I look at the customer experience, I'm like, great, we are greeting at the door. You know, we are saying hello. We're going to do a walkthrough with them. Then this email gets triggered to them to welcoming them to the program. So I took all those things that I was doing and I was documenting them, which I think is such an important part of growing and training and execution. And it keeps our customer experience at the highest level because we're able to be consistent around it, right? You're not getting a different experience if Nora's at the door or somebody else is at the door. You get that same level of quality. So for me, I always tell people, start with breaking down your own business. What can I automate? What can I add training manuals to, or what needs a process or procedure established? It cannot run on your back. It cannot be like, well, I'll call Nora and ask her what we should do. Well, why is my employee not equipped and have the authority to make that decision? I also realized I don't worry about bad decisions. I worry about correcting them for next time. You can give away anything you need to. If you felt that that was the right decision at that moment, then that is the right decision. And guess what, though? As soon as it's not, we just correct it for next time. So you also have to give up some of that control in some regards. That way you empower people around you. So again, that growth has to really do with the empowerment, with the processes, automating things, using systems that are available and are great. The technology is there. I always tended to shy away from technology a little bit. But as my husband would say, he had to pull the BlackBerry out of my hand and upgrade me. I loved what I loved. But you know what? I've never looked back, right? I've never used the system and thought, oh, this made it worse. No, I think everything makes things a little bit easier and a little bit more efficient and productive.
I think the thing that will be surprising to individuals who are considering franchise ownership is that you would need to, because you're theoretically you're supposed to be buying this business model that's fully vetted, ready to go, ready for prime time, that you would have to go and do what you're doing, which is looking at the brand, the business model, and breaking it down in that detail and figuring out where you need to augment it to improve it. Have any of the franchisors taken some of your ideas or the things, the business automations you've implemented and then taken them for to do brand wide?
Yeah, I believe so. I'd like to speak confidently. I believe that I've become a partner with the franchises that I own. I believe that I've always been open to sharing ideas. I've always been open to process improvement. And some of that has to do with maybe my background a little bit, but it also has to do with personality. I believe that information should not be hidden. Things should be transparent. You can probably ask anybody that knows me. I will always let you know what I think anyway, whether you want to hear it or not. But the reality is that even when I bought a franchise, my idea was that somebody was going to hand me a toolkit with absolutely everything figured out.
Me too. I did
Yes. And then I was like, well, where's this? Where's my employee manual? Where's, and they're like, well, we don't have that. We don't have that. And at first I was like, this is ridiculous. And how, am I supposed to work? And then I thought, wait a sec, it's my business. It is not until you understand that this is your business. You bought the box of the product, but they're not going to execute it for you. If you want to execute it, you do that. If you want to execute it at a higher level, you're the only one that controls that. And it's not until you fully understand that, until I think that's the difference between running a franchise at the average level, is let's call it, versus at the higher level. Everybody that you ever hear with like the top performing franchise owners, it's not that they just take the business in a box and implement it. They have all the little extras. That's the difference, because we're all running the same program. It's not like your program in Detroit looks different than in Florida. Ideally, we're all running the same program. But why do I do more business than they do? What is it that I'm doing differently, right? I think that's where I always tell people, once you fully understand that even though it's a franchise, even though there's a little bit more support and structure and some things have been worked out a little bit more, it does not mean it's not your business to fully run and operate. I think that that is such an important component. And if you see something mi missing, fix it and then share the information upward. Whether they take it or not, that's not your deal. You're running your business at your highest level capacity. You have to, again, back to that trusting yourself. Do you trust yourself enough to trust your own opinions about your own business? There is things that I know about my community that have proven very helpful and successful versus somebody in a corporate office would never be able to tell me. They don't know my community. They don't know maybe the little things, nuances that I might know, or things that me being, somebody born and raised in the Michigan area might know. I know when lake season is, I know when hunting season is, right? Those are things specific to us and our community. This comes down back to that trusting yourself to when you see something missing, that you recognize it and move forward. Don't say it must be missing, but that means it doesn't work. That just means it's time for you to roll up your sleeves and make it, take it to that next level. That's on you.
Well, and one thing that individuals who are considering franchise ownership need to understand is that if you're buying into a franchise that's been around for 30 years, 40 years, probably the infrastructure, the support is more hopefully more fully vetted, and you might not have to do some of the things you've done, like writing an HR manual or something like that, let's hope, or at least they would have some template that you could then customize for yourself. But when you're investing in these emerging brands, which I think all of those that you're in were probably emerging when you went in. Is that true? Or was
Yes,
British film
yes.
school
Yeah,
more
British
similar?
Film School. Now it's owned under a completely different group. Their systems and processes are night and day difference.
Yeah.
But it's not what I invested in now that I know this for sure. 9 years ago was a really good swim program, not how to operate it. Just a really good swim program that we haven't strayed far from. We still probably run for the most part that same really strong swim program, but everything around it is what we developed and what I noticed that even now with the new ownership, they continue to develop.
Yeah, I think as I talk to more and more franchisees, I'm learning as I go too, as I do
Yes.
this podcast, is that maybe my expectations of the franchise brand I was in was too high with respect to the infrastructure. But I still think you need to look at the leadership team. If it's my leadership team was not good, and the CEO in particular was terrible. So you're right. You can look at the product. Is the product there? Will it translate in your market? And is the leadership strong enough that it can carry you through, those beginning years of the franchise? But you are going to have to bring in your own automations, efficiencies, the ways in which you think you need to improve the business.
100%. And listen, I agree with you. I've met so many franchise organizations. I've seen people trying to franchise a concept that hasn't even been proven out. So for
Exactly.
me, it's almost a little bit, I love the franchising market. I love the opportunities, I guess. What I love about franchising is I think it opens up the door for entrepreneurship in a way that we haven't really seen. When I was younger and starting out, the only way I knew you start a business is if you had $1 million and you had the best idea in the world. And there was no, and I'm aging myself a little bit, right? Like it wasn't like you can just go on YouTube and start, influencing or making videos of this great product that you have. That just didn't work that way. So in my mind, I don't have $1 million. I don't have a business. That means I can't do that. I can't be an entrepreneur. And I think that's why I went into corporate for so many years. And I think though nowadays with franchising, you have so many different price points. You can enter a franchise, with not a lot of money under 100,000, you can enter a franchise at 3 million and 5 million, right? Like the range is so broad. But I think what the market is forgetting in this process is that not all franchises are equal. Not all franchise opportunities are great. And not all franchises have been vetted in a way that if you're the first location, run. And I keep reminding people who even people with great businesses that say, what do you think? Can I franchise it? I said, yes, build 3 to 5 more and show me that it works across the board, right? Because a franchise model needs to be duplicated and it needs to
Absolutely.
be, you need to be able to prove success in different markets. So for me, I always say to people, be a little bit, you have to do a lot more due diligence because there's a lot of trust a little bit in the franchise process. That's why when you're doing validation calls, when you're speaking to owners, also, use your own common sense. Use your own senses. Does this sound right? Is this a product I would back? Do they have enough of a track record to show me that this is something that could be successful? I think having those conversations are really important. And then when you do sign the dotted line, take it on and run with it. Really, don't slow down the process. Don't let it intimidate you. You have to almost have that false narrative, that belief in yourself that now I'm going to execute it at the highest level. I think because as people, obviously, I joke, but I go through every emotion every day, up, down, happy, sad, maybe being a parent, but
Yeah.
it's the truth, right? But that also happens in business. You go from a moment you're highly motivated and excited to, oh my God, what did we just do? Or this will never work to this is the best idea in the world, right? Like you also have to navigate through all of those things a little bit, but kind of keep your eyes straight. Like don't get caught up in your emotions, but keep it level-headed as much as you can.
Well, that's a wrap on part one of my conversation with Nora Farhat. Next week, I'll continue with part two of my conversation with her. In that episode, Nora will talk about why she thinks women should consider franchise ownership and why she's a big proponent of owning multiple franchise systems.
At the top of this episode, Nora mentioned she has a podcast. Again, it's called Upside Down Entrepreneurship. You can access that by going to upsidedownentrepreneurship.com, all one word, lowercase. You can also find Nora on LinkedIn. Just search Nora Farhat, F-A-R-H-A-T. All of Nora's contact information will appear in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Don't hesitate to reach out to me via email by going to the contact page on my website, christinegivens.com. If you're currently evaluating a franchise system, make sure you get my guide called The Ultimate Step-by-Step Guide to Vetting and Evaluating a Franchise Opportunity. You'll also find that resource on my website. As always, tune in next week, and thanks for listening.